The universe is loud in a very quiet way. Are you listening? Listening? Welcome to the Cosmic Whispers podcast, where we delve into the realms of spirituality, personal growth, and the cosmic dance between the third and fifth dimensions. In a world filled with noise and distractions, we invite you to tune in to your own cosmic whispers, where we can awaken our inner wisdom and embark on unveiling the authentic self and cosmic connection. Please note that the content provided here is not intended as medical advice. It is essential to consult your healthcare professional for any medical inquiries. Welcome to episode 2. Today we have a special guest, Leo van Voorden. Leo is a sleep expert, biohacker, speaker, coach, drummer, and neuroscientist, specializing in memory, mental fitness, sleep, and optimal functioning in our modern world. With a master's degree in neuroscience and a deep passion for biohacking, Leo lives by his philosophy of combining Western science with Eastern wisdom to empower others in optimizing their metabolic health via nutrition, food, supplements, and lifestyle. Be sure to catch Leo's captivating TED Talk titled Shift Your 5 Brain Gears to Unlock Your Full Potential, available on YouTube. Welcome, Leo. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Jen, for this beautiful introduction, and thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Before we start, I'd like to pull a card to see what our guides want to set the intention for today's episode.
Nice. Exciting.
Ooh, this is nice. Reveal what needs to be seen.
Reveal what needs to be seen.
Let's see. What are you going to reveal to us today, Leo?
Okay, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're currently working on?
Yeah, well, actually, the card is sort of spot on. So what I do is I help people get into an optimal shape, mentally, physically. And I think the brain has a really important role in this one. But what I nowadays see is that if you do measurements, and I did a lot of measurements on my own body, and we train people using measurements and biohack these people, help them improve their vitality, then there's so much we don't see in ourselves. Mm. So if you measure your microbiome, if you measure your hormones, if you measure your DNA, your blood, you will see so many interesting things. So you can use all this data to actually improve your vitality and to make your life more beautiful, to get yourself in a more energized state, lower your risk for diseases, and so forth and so forth. Yeah, I found this fascinating. Absolutely.
Yeah, biohacking is great. I had mentioned in my first podcast that I started about 12 years ago, and it's quite prevalent in the US. And then when I came to Europe, I was kind of like looking for the biohacking community. And then when I met you, when you're hacking my sleep, it was just really cool to meet someone here that can help others in terms of like the biohacking world. And you're based in the Netherlands, correct? Can you work with people worldwide as well?
Absolutely, I can. At the moment, I'm based in the Netherlands, and I work with people in the Netherlands at the moment. But we do more and more internationally. Yeah, we met each other through the biohacking of the sleep. And this is also an interesting part because I just, happened to learn a lot about sleep, not because I wanted to sleep so much. Actually, I never slept really that much. I thought it was not that important. But, you know, if you try to really improve your mind and your body, sleep is just an area you can't go around.
And I think that sleep is overlooked a lot, especially in the modern world, because people are like, oh, you can sleep when you die. But I'm like, that's going to catch up eventually. How important is sleep, and how does it affect your body and the brain in the long term if you're sleep deprived?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And you're right. Sleep is so incredibly overlooked. I mean, we are the only species on the planet that deliberately withheld ourselves from a good night of sleep. We made sleep somehow a moment in the day that is not important, that we're like not doing interesting stuff. But sleep is neuroscience. Sleep is two of the 5 brain gears, as I like to call them. And you need to switch your brain gears in order to get vital, to become vital. So it's incredibly important for of course, your health, but also for your growth mentally and physically.
Yeah, because if you're not letting your body or your brain rest, then what else can you do? Then everything kind of starts deteriorating. And I think in my, I think I've been through like 3 burnouts.
Wow.
a lot of it was due to not sleeping well. Thankfully, I've been able to manage it thanks to your help.
Yeah, that's heavy to hear. And I mean, there's so many people ending up in a burnout. And before that, they have stressful periods. They don't feel well. And of course, this is the result that they end in a burnout. And it even goes further. People get really sick and ill physically.
Yeah.
I'm talking about heavy diseases that they get. Not that burnout is not a heavy sort of, yeah, you can also call it the disease.
Disease of the modern world.
I mean, depression is like, yeah, depression might be the worst disease that there is, right? Because, yeah, you're so unhappy and this is terrible. But of course, yeah, looking at other diseases like cancer and Alzheimer's, for to name, you know, only two sorts of diseases, your risk increases by not sleeping enough.
You're very much a scientist, but you're also quite spiritual, correct?
I was raised in a Catholic family, but I never did much after my 12th year with religion, so to speak. But I do consider myself as a person who I love to study science, but I also not only do not neglect the spiritual side and the, you know, the Eastern wisdom, as I would like to call it. But I think, you know, there's a big opportunity there. I mean, I love to connect the Western science with Eastern wisdom and spirituality. If you study science more and more and you go deeper and deeper, there's actually not that much difference between religion and science and spirituality.
I would say, like, for me personally, I say I'm like spiritual, but not religious. If that makes sense, because I don't, I don't know. I feel like if you follow your intuition, then you can believe in what works for you. And in that way, I personally don't like to push certain dogmas on people. And so that's the way I see kind of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give me an example of how like science and spirituality are connected? Maybe in terms of energy or vibrations, frequencies?
Yeah, absolutely. If you study, you know, the big scientists in the world and you see what they found out, and I'm talking about Einstein, but I read some books, for instance, the books of Brian Greene. He taught me a lot about the snare theory. So the thing is that we live in a world of physical materials, atoms, molecules, etc., things you can touch. But if you zoom in, you know, from our size to an atom, then you see the electrons floating around these atoms. And there's no difference anymore if you go beyond that between materials and energy. And if you zoom in further and further and you go to the smallest particles we know, for instance, the Higgs particles, you know, there's only energy. There's only vibrating energy. And we are sort of in one big field. I mean, you and I, even though we are, there's a big distance between us in this quantum field, the smallest field energy that we know, of the smallest particles, we are connected. There's no nothing in there. There's energy between us. There we are connected. You can, of course, see this field also as a sort of a God field.
Yeah, or the universe.
And energy flows from one part to the other.
Tupi agrees. Tupi is also connected to us in our quantum field right now.
Yes, he likes to talk and to join the conversation.
Yeah, she's always part of the podcast because she always has an opinion.
But it's kind of cool that she joins into the conversation. Yeah, she feels the energy, I guess.
For sure. I'm a highly sensitive person and she's a highly sensitive dog.
Nice.
We're very connected in that way. Is there a connection between sleep and our spiritual or intuitive experiences?
Oh, definitely. Perhaps it will help if I give you a short neuroscience crash course, and then we can talk about how sleep comes in there.
Sure, love it.
Your brain, it counts like 86 billion neurons that can connect with each other. And when they connect, they can communicate, they can pass along electrical currents. This is the way actually that the neurons communicate, by passing along ions, and we see that there's electrical currents. I studied this on the lab. In the lab, you can make memory actually by using electrodes and giving electrical currents. The thing is that if you add up all this electricity on the outside, we see brainwave activity. And the brainwave activity actually goes from like half a hertz up to 100 or over 100 hertz. So low frequency to high frequency vibrations. Now, we ended up calling a couple of frequencies sleep. But sleep is not just sleep. Sleep is like the basic fundamental frequency of the brain. So like when you're in deep sleep, you are in the delta phase of sleep. I call this brain gear number one. It's your first gear, also for the reason that it's like the most important energy state, brainwave state for your immune system. You boost your health in this brain gear. You make long-term memory from your short-term memory. You make your hormones, you balance your hormones. You get your energy from this state. And it only lasts for 1 or 2 hours in a night, in a whole day, actually. So after this deep phase of the sleep, you go into the theta brainwave zone. And this is like when your eyes go fast from left to right in the rapid eye movement, REM state of the sleep. So now your brain is actually not in the lowest state of the consciousness as that it is in the delta phase of the sleep, but now it's pretty high, actually. I mean, it burns tremendous amounts of energy in this state, and magic sort of happens here. And talking about spirituality in this brain state, you sort of connect the dots. You can also enter this state using plants that contain substances like DMT.
Yep.
They are known to help people to switch to the theta brainwave zone. And of course, when we sleep, we are not really aware that we are in this phase. Perhaps with a drug, you can be conscious in this state. But what we see in the literature is that in the theta brainwave zone, yeah, you lower your emotions. So you also lower fear. It's really important. You develop your motor skills. So every trick you try to learn, that you learn in the theta brainwave zone. So a lot of magical things happen in this state.
So in this state, would you consider like being able to access other dimensions then?
Well, yeah, of course we don't know. Yeah. But perhaps. Okay, so we're in our mind, and our mind is a really unique organ. So what it does, we have a couple of senses, and it collects input from out of these senses, and it tries to make something of it. But when you sleep, you sort of shut down all your sensory input, and you try to make something with it. Perhaps the brain is also capable of collecting energy from out of the cosmos if it's in another state. So, of course, we also feel. And I think the brain, as it is an electrical organ, it might very well be capable of, you know, sensing energy. So if you see spirituality as like energy in the cosmos,
yeah,
I think the brain is by design an organ that should be able to do this. And of course, this also explains a lot of the things that we see. I mean, we see people that have special abilities, telepathic abilities, etc. People who feel things that other people don't feel. But of course, you know, if you only look to a dog, it's probably more sensitive to energy than a lot of the humans are.
Oh, absolutely.
And the brains, actually, of the most animals on the planet, they are quite similar.
These intuitive abilities, I feel like, are quite natural. Obviously, they're natural in the animal world. I feel like humans used to have it, but in the modern world, we've just not gotten rid of it, but just haven't used it, haven't exercised it. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually a medium, but I haven't practiced, but I'm learning to practice and open up my third eye more and learn about the sixth sense. And now I'm starting to see a difference in my dream state. Like I've been starting to lucid dream every once in a while, not by really trying, but it just happens, for example, or like I'll have other kind of like dreams where I feel like they really happen. So it almost feels like I'm like in the fifth dimension and I wasn't really dreaming.
Wow.
Would this all again be in that theta state, or would this be in a different state, like lucid dreaming, all this kind of stuff?
You can have different states in different times of the day. You can have a little bit theta in the day, but it is so that in the dream state, we see most of the theta brain waves. We don't know all about it. We don't know much about it. But it does seem that this is the most, the best state in which to become a medium can be developed.
Oh, okay.
You're right, because you mentioned that we don't use it anymore. Mm-hmm. So we see, you know, we see all different animals on the planet with pretty similar brains, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, even a mouse, the brain of a mouse is not that different of that of a human and a dog. Mm. There are some differences, but the biggest differences that are the connections in the brain. So which part is connected with which mm-hmm. part? And you can train this. So if you want to be more sensitive to your outer surroundings and to energies, that this is something you could train. Absolutely.
Have you done any lucid dreaming yourself?
I do remember my dreams quite a lot. Not always. And I have been lucid now and then, but I can't really, I don't have control over it. I do know how to intensify the dreaming process. You can take some supplements, and you can do, you know, you can use techniques to be more conscious in this sort of low conscious state, but more aware that you dream. Absolutely. And I found this fascinating, because what I see is that in some articles, they explain how the highest energy state, called it the gamma brainwave state, we see the most spindles of the gamma spindles in the dream phase of the night, so in the theta brainwave zone.
Ah.
So it appears that the brain develops itself in this theta brainwave zone. And we know that some monks in Tibet, who are the masters in meditation, they can close their eyes and meditate and be really in touch with their surroundings. And they show a lot of these gamma brainwave energy spikes or zones, so to speak. To be really open to your surroundings, you called it your third eye.
Yeah.
You could say that this might be in the gamma brainwave zone, and you could train it using the dream state.
It's fascinating what you can really develop, especially through meditation.
Absolutely. Meditating is a powerful tool to develop the mind.
Definitely. Do you meditate?
Yeah. The funny thing is that I thought I could meditate because, you know, I listened to people and I read some things about meditation, you know, sitting on your knees and just closing your eyes, try to meditate. And I thought, oh, I can't do this. But when I learned what meditation actually is, it appeared that I was doing it all along. So the funny thing is that actually when people meditate, they try to go to the theta brainwave zone. So they actually try to go to the dreamwave zone by being, you know, sort of in an awake state. So to be aware of that you are in this state. That is what you try to do with meditation. You actually switch gears. You try to go from your stressed zone, the beta zone, to the alpha state, and then lower, go to the theta brainwave state. Some people even can go as low as the delta brainwave state using meditation techniques. So this is also why when you wake up and you stay in your bed and try to, you know, stay relaxed, try not to think that much, then you're actually probably, you are already meditating yourself. And I used this a lot, just, you know, being there, just closing my eyes and just try to not think that much. And I was doing this, yeah, I think already when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, it is a practice too, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think some people think you need to just have a blank mind, but I think the whole point is just to sit still.
Yeah, the point is to sit still. And also, you have to understand that if you want to go to the theta brainwave zone using meditation, then it's just easier when you try to do it when falling asleep or waking up. But of course, when you fall asleep, you probably fall deep asleep. And then you lose your meditation, you go to the deep sleep state. So if you wake up, you have your energy, you can stay awake, and you can keep yourself more easily in the theta brainwave zone, and you're meditating like a professional. But when it's 5 o'clock, you had a stressful day at work, and then you go to a yoga room with other people and you try to meditate, this might be a little bit more difficult, because you have to go from a high beta stress brainwave zone, you know, and switch through the alpha state and go to the theta brainwave zone.
Right. And that's why I think it's always recommended to do it right upon waking.
Absolutely. Yeah, that works the best. It's the shortest bridge, so to speak.
How does the alignment of our body and brain rhythms contribute to better sleep for more optimal function?
Everything in the universe, it's about rhythm. When the rhythm is tight and rhythmic, you know, we see that there's power and strength. So the earth rotates around the sun, etc. We have the ebb and the floods. But looking at our bodies, we see that if you want to switch gears thoroughly, that means going from a energized awake state to the deep sleep state, for instance, this goes the best if you have a good rhythm of everything you do during the day. And that means the rhythm should be really good and the timing should be really good of your light, for instance. Have a lot of light in your eyes at day and low light in the night. If you have the good timing and a good rhythm for this, this will help you switch to the deep sleep state. When you do exercising, well, you do best if you exercise on same times, on same days in a week, because your body would remember it and you will grow the fastest. So timing is important and rhythm is important to be able to switch to these gears, through these gears.
Are there any specific tips or practices you'd recommend for sleep hygiene? I know you mentioned earlier about light. And I think that's a big thing, especially now because we have phones and our screens and our computers on all day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most people know a lot about these things, but it's perhaps difficult, you know, to do what you need to do because of all the distraction you have in the world and because perhaps it's not that certain. To name this example, of course, light is important. We live millions of years already with light, so we need light to stay awake and we need darkness to fall asleep. Simple as that. But of course, we drink coffee and drinks with caffeine in there. And caffeine is like a deep sleep killer. So caffeine in your blood will make your sleep less effective. As simple as that. When you have sounds, for instance, that make you shiver or, you know, come in a chaotic way, so to speak, this, of course, destroys your good night of sleep. Alcohol is a sleep killer. Most drugs, actually, and medications are sleep killers. So it's really easy to disturb sleep. So you want to keep these away from your sleep. You do best if your stomach is not too full. This will help you fall asleep easily. So these are just, you know, the most common things that you could apply. And sometimes a little bit more difficult, and you have to search. You help people, you know, search in their lives what they can improve.
Yeah, I remember when we were working together for my sleep, I don't drink alcohol and I cut everything out. And I even cut out caffeine, which is my one vice, is just coffee. But I have to admit that I slept really well after I gave up caffeine.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. And you actually, because what I saw, what you all wrote in your Excel, I mean, you kept your whole life.
My lifestyle diary.
Like a biohacker. You did so many good things already. So it was kind of difficult, you know, to figure out what went wrong. But I remember that you had this running nose and you used ibuprofen.
Yeah.
And we took that out. I think that was also an important one.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, that's a little thing. 99% is what you do is good. And then there's just a little thing that can, you know, help you to the next level.
Yeah, I think at that time it was, well, I guess it kind of still, if I can't turn off my monkey brain, that's like the one little detail. I mean, I'm sleeping pretty okay now, but it's the monkey brain part. But, you know, that's a work in progress.
Yeah, well, I mean, stress and especially mental stress is like sleep deprivation rule or reason number one. Mm-hmm. And this is the biggest problem that humans have. You know, we are mentally quite tough to ourselves and to others. And this gives us a lot of mental stress. And mental stress leads to, you know, stress hormones, etc. And they will keep you awake.
Have you ever felt like you need a little grounding when the full moon hits? Perhaps you want to open your third eye a bit before meditation. Get your creative juices flowing for a project or balance some womb healing. Cosmic Mama Ceremonial Herbal Teas for the Chakras can help. Our 100% organic, sustainably sourced, and caffeine-free blends are meticulously handcrafted in small batches. Whether you're looking for an herbal infusion to complement an intentional moment or ceremony, or you just want to enjoy a soothing and delicious brew, Cosmic Mama is here for you. You can support our podcast and enjoy 15% off with code WHISPERS15 on cosmicmama.co. Indulge in the magic of Cosmic Mama Ceremonial Herbal Teas and let their harmonizing essence guide you on your path of connection and well-being. So what is your routine like? What is it like a day in the life of Leo?
So, well, I just did a biohacking program. So I learned a lot about my body. So I have now a big stack of healthy supplements.
Oh, what are you taking right now?
Yeah, when I wake up, yeah. I take a glass of water and I take a couple of supplements that are, you know, that I know that are good for me. So these are things like glutathione, mm-hmm. magnesium, a couple of plant extracts, lion's mane. Of course, I developed my own supplements and there's a list of ingredients in there that I all needed, so to speak. So like Bacopa Monnery and green tea extract. So a lot of plant extracts, actually. A couple of vitamins. I know from my gene report that my genes don't take up vitamin B12 that easy. So, of course, I can eat meat or use an extra supplement for that. So this is what I do when I wake up. I usually now, you know, after 90 minutes, I take one cup of coffee, double espresso. But actually, the last couple of days, I'm more into, you know, cacao, just chocolate.
Oh, yeah. Cacao's great.
Yeah.
Like real cacao.
Yeah, real cacao, biological cacao. And I make it really strong and I put some herbs in there. I love it. I mean, it tastes really well. And it gives me a beautiful energy flow.
And the cacao is a heart opener.
Yeah.
So it opens the heart chakra.
Yeah.
So it's a very nice way to start the day.
Beautiful. And I feel that too. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And you know, every other day I go to the gym in the morning. So I start mm-hmm. at 7, do my exercises. But otherwise, I have a beautiful week now. I have 3 days a week that I work with a company developing brain supplements. I have one day a week that I work with my biohacking friends from Human Upgrade, and the other company actually where I develop the brain supplements is from Professor Moscoyer after the summer, and developing brain supplements. And the final day in the week, I'm also building my website now, leovanwoerden.com, mm-hmm. and my my training, how to switch gears. Sleep training, anti-stress training. We launched that also at the end of the summer. So busy week.
Yeah, that's a lot of great projects you're working on. How much sleep are you getting?
Yeah, well, I sleep enough. I go to bed quite early. Sometimes, when the kids are in bed, I already go to bed too, reading a little bit. But I sleep enough. I mean, with the strategy that I have, I can make it, you know, like in 7 hours, I can have like 1.5 hour, sometimes 2 hours of deep sleep and REM sleep. So, and I wake up fit with that. This is actually enough deep sleep and REM sleep for the way I'm living. And this is perfect.
And how about diet? Do you follow a specific diet?
Yes, this is also so interesting. Yeah. So I read a lot of books about healthy diets. And so I already knew a lot. You know, I did two studies. Medical biology, I read a couple of books about food and nutrition. I knew a lot of about supplements, but now that I tested my genes and my blood and etc., I knew I have even improved my diet once again. Mm-hmm. So I'm now higher on proteins, also because I exercise more. Carbohydrates are much lower. I have certain vegetables that I eat a lot and other vegetables that I eat less than I did before. Also, different sorts of fruit. Mm-hmm. So it's more detailed actually now. And it appeared for my microbiome that, you know, asparagus and like different sorts of coles were better for me than other vegetables, broccoli, etc. So I have a better and more healthy diet actually now than I used to have. And I feel really good with it.
I guess that's similar to like a paleo-ish diet, correct?
Yeah, it does have a lot of it, absolutely. I do think that, I mean, I love, you know, with the good fats and proteins and not too much sugar. This is what I love, absolutely.
When I started my biohacking journey, I went from like a high sugar, high grain. It was like high dairy, high gluten diet. It was awful. I was feeling terrible. And then I went paleo, or I started with the anti-Candida diet and went to paleo, and like my health pretty much changed within 3 weeks.
Wow.
my diet has completely evolved over the past decade. I'm not full paleo anymore, and it's, but I actually can eat a little bit of rice and be okay. And like, I eat more root vegetables now. I eat only beef and seafood and veggies. And I restarted intermittent fasting again as well. I've been listening to my body intuitively about food now. Whereas before I was like super, like in my early biohacking days, I was very strict with my diet. You know, I was like writing down what I ate and how it failed. Now I'm more doing it intuitively and being able to digest a little bit of more carbohydrates, but still not high sugar. But it's just a really interesting thing to observe, like how your body changes over time and your energy levels change. We all got to also, you know, on top of the biohacking, but also listen to your bodies intuitively.
Absolutely. I mean, and this is incredible that you are able to, you know, really listen to your body and you adjusted your diet accordingly and that it works so well for you. I mean, this is also pretty difficult for most of the people. We're not used to, you know, really listen to our bodies anymore.
Yeah.
And we should, because it's better. So therefore, I do measurements. Of course, I listen also to my body, but the measurements help me too. But if get there, you know, by just really going into your body and listen to your body, that's like brilliant.
And I think, again, it takes practice. And I think the body honestly has the answers for almost everything, whether it's making decisions, realizing something's aching, or, you know, again, diet. If we just practice and tune in, you know, it just gets easier over time.
Yeah.
You'll realize the signals in your body for what is good for you. Just fascinating.
Absolutely. And I do think it can get you a long way, far away. But what I also see, for instance, my wife thought she was doing very well on certain vegetables. But then out of her measurements, these certain vegetables were not that good for her, actually. So this was really, it astonished us, actually. So when when people are sleep deprived, the body tricks you. You think you need certain things, for instance, the greasy food, fast food. And of course, we know that's not healthy. But, you know, when you're sleep deprived, your hormones are out of balance and the body gives the wrong signal, so to speak. So this also happens. So if you want to be able to really follow your body and listen to it, you want to make sure that you have a healthy lifestyle as you have. That's my tip also for the listener. So if you listen to your body, make sure your timing and rhythm is good, that you're not sleep deprived, and don't have an addiction or something.
The thing is, like, when you're sleep deprived and your body's out of balance, and then you start eating these unhealthy foods, and then these unhealthy foods also send signals to your brain that you need more. So it's almost like these unhealthy foods are like a drug, and it's like, and then you get stuck in that cycle.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then how do you get out of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, let food be thy medicine and let medicine be thy food is what we say.
Yes.
Absolutely. And it is. It is the best drug in the world. I mean, it's food. Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on sugar being called an addictive drug? They've had studies on it, I think, in lab rats, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I read an article about it. I think they put people in an MRI scanner and actually, well, giving them sugar or cocaine, it doesn't really matter to the brain. I think it still boosts dopamine in the nucleus accumbens. Sugar is extremely addictive. It's logic also. I mean, because when you look into nature, when you have fruits and when they are good to be eaten, then they are sweet. So it helped us, you know, like thousands of years. But we made a mess about out of it because we now put sugar in everything because, it was a healthy addiction because, you know, we were searching for it in the forest, but now we misuse it. We get people addictive to the sugar, and this is a terrible thing. People get so addicted that they eat themselves into a diabetic state. Toes fall off. This is what happens.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I mean, I used to be a sugar addict. I think that was the one thing I was addicted to. But I can literally feel like when I have my cheat days, I mean, I can manage it now. It's been so long. But when I do have like a cheat day, my body tells me it just feels awful. And then I'm reminded why I don't eat like this regularly.
Exactly. Well, so I can sort of relate to this. I mean, I ate a lot of sugar too when I was young. I mean, my mother was a sugar addict, extremely sugar addict. So we always had a lot of sweets in our house. And of course, as a kid, you don't know. You don't know better. I never eat sugar anymore. But when I eat something sweet, like a candy bar, I get sort of ill. I feel terrible. I get really tired, want to go to sleep. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
And the brain fog, too, is awful.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Like, wow, my brain does not function. So on another note, what are your thoughts and experiences with psychedelics? Professionally, personally?
Ooh.
This is something I love to talk about.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So the way I look at nature, I mean, psychedelics, they grow in nature, right? I mean, we have mushrooms. We have DMT. I mean, it's fascinating how, you know, people just started mixing two plants and they, you know, DMT substance came out of it and people ate it. I mean, how did they found that out? But we did. And the mushrooms, of course, they just grow there and some kill you, but some give you a beautiful experience. Some you can just eat. But the thing is that there are substances that make you hallucinate. And we used to think that, you know, that they help you make you see things that are not there. But the question is, is that so? Or because when you look at the neuroscience into it from a neuroscientific perspective, what these drugs do is they trigger certain receptors in the brain, like, for instance, serotonin receptors. And then you get these visions. You might be really more in touch with your surroundings, and it can be used as a powerful tool to help you develop your brain, actually. But of course, there are also risks. You can see it. It's just like food, but with an extremely powerful working mechanism, so to speak. So with food, you can also train and make your body and your brain grow. With mushrooms that have hallucinogen substances in there, DMT and psilocybin, you could train your brain if you have the right intentions.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, having the right intentions, being educated on it, using it in the right way, dosage. And I feel like a lot of ancient civilizations, like all around the world, have their own psychedelic plants that can be found in bushes or, you know, in nature. And I think I watched something about dolphins. Were they playing with like pufferfish in order for the pufferfish to excrete toxins, which are actually psychedelic for the dolphins? But I saw this and I was just like fascinated how even in nature, you know, animals find ways to take medicine.
I didn't know that the pufferfish had drugs that the dolphins used, but I know, I mean, it's a heavy toxic substance that they excrete. But what is poison for the one is a hallucinogen for the other. And most of the times it's also the dosage. So there are these, pods, I think they're called, a pot. And they have this DMT substance on their back. So probably when some animals lick that too much, they die. But if you take a little bit, you go into a hallucinogen state.
It's dosing. It's all about dosing and set and setting.
It's all about dosage. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's most of the time is about dosage. But I think, for instance, they tried to search for the how do you say that, the killing dosage for a substance like LSD. Yeah, I think they couldn't find it. Or mushrooms.
No, there's no.
You can't really overdose it, apparently.
No.
But of course, you could go mad if your mind is messed up. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of fears or, you know, things that that make you frightened, or so to speak. Then it could be dangerous.
Right. Like if you're severely traumatized, it's probably not advised to take a hero's dose of LSD to try to cure that, you know. So
exactly. One could go mad
and
psychosis in the genes, then or the risk in the genes. It could be a risk, absolutely.
I'm just really happy to see how much, you know, how many clinical studies they're doing for mental health with the usage of psychedelics. And I think MDMA specifically, is it legal in Israel right now for PTSD? I don't know if there's another country that's legal in, but anyway, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the progress it will make to help people.
Yeah, what I do think is an interesting difference when you look at certain drugs. A lot of the medication on the planet, they work mm-hmm. on one mechanism. For instance, when a drug works on the reuptake inhibiting system, you only take away things that work in the brain. You only take away neurotransmitters. You boost it for a short time, but you don't add nothing. But there's a difference when you use mushrooms or LSD. They don't really drain, so to speak, your brain from these substances. Yeah, this also explains the downer, of course, that people get after using MDMA or ecstasy or all these kinds of things. But also antidepressant medication. You get addicted because once you stop, you get a downer, a big one, because nothing is added. So this is important also. When you use something in the brain, you want to make sure that you look at the whole chain. You want to know on which receptors do these substances work, and you know, do I make the baths empty? Do I empty something? And what does the brain need to synthesize it again? This is really important.
I think nowadays people are becoming more conscious of psychedelic use and kind of the proper way to do it and being more smart about it. It's not about mixing and doing just random things altogether. Now there's definitely a more conscious approach, especially since it's being used more for healing versus partying.
Yeah, for healing, absolutely. And to come back to your question about the spiritual zone, so DMT from, you know, what is in ayahuasca, this is known to help people switch to the theta brainwave zone. And people absolutely heal themselves using these plant extracts.
I'm a big supporter of plant medicine.
So what have you, how have you healed yourself?
I would say when I was working for my last company, I was working a lot and I was like a one-woman show and it was extremely stressful. And I was actually really scared about it because I had seen my friends when I was younger take it in the complete wrong way and just have a little bit of psychosis. But after doing tons of research, and where I'm from in San Francisco is quite normal, especially amongst the entrepreneurs, to be using psychedelics to help their brain optimally, actually. And so I think I studied or like read about it for maybe a year and a half and had a lot of friends kind of coach me with their experiences. And I started microdosing and I was in a really kind of depressive state and I had heart palpitations from anxiety. Mm-hmm. But with microdosing, I was able to actually function better. I wasn't stressed anymore. Like I would be able to look at my to-do list and just work without that attachment to stress, and I could focus better. My mind was clearer, and a side effect was also like my anxiety and my depression went away.
Interesting.
It was really, really interesting, and I did that for quite a few months, and I was extremely productive. So on like a efficiency level is great, and also on a mental stability level is great as well.
Fascinating. What did you microdose?
LSD.
Oh yeah.
And it was the tiniest little bit. I would say 5 micrograms. I think the recommended dosage is like maybe 10 to 15 every 3 days.
Yeah. Well, I think microdosing is fascinating. So, I mean, the brain and all its receptors, it's extremely complex system. But we do think that the dosage really determines the way receptors also open. You can visualize it like somebody playing a trumpet, for instance. You can press the nuts further and not that far when you blow hard or soft. So you make a different song. When you megadose, so to speak, it's like everything opens, boff, you know, you go full throttle. And of course, this is also why there is the big effects occur and the risks that are there. But it's not like a linear thing that if you lower the dosage, you know, it's linear lowering of the mechanism. No, it's probably a little bit of a different mechanism because you tickle the receptors. You help them play a different song, so to speak. I hope I explained that so that everybody can understand a little bit.
I like the analogy. It was actually with a higher dose, now that I look back, it was a higher dose that got rid of my heart palpitations overnight. I had light heart palpitations from stress for about a month, and the next day it was gone. I was like, wow. It changed something in my brain, you know, like for the good.
Absolutely. And this is, I mean, this is the power that these tools have. And I mean, they did a lot of research on LSD and other hallucinogen substances in the, I think, the 50s and the 60s. So they're actually already, they were known, you know, to treat a lot of mental illnesses and diseases. But of course, there are also risks. And I don't know, other substances were developed. So they kind of got into a bad corner, LSD, for instance. These are powerful tools that can really cure people.
Yeah, just it really just has to be used mindfully. There's this video I saw about, I think the CIA was giving LSD to soldiers way back in the day to see if they could use it for war. And the soldiers ended up climbing trees and like singing and laughing. And they're like, yeah, we're not using this. And like, they didn't want to fight. They just wanted to just, you know, hang around in nature and be together.
Yeah, so exactly. So this is absolutely the wrong drug, you know, for people to get into a war.
Yeah.
I don't have the proof, but I read it in a couple of books. And I do think there is proof that, I think, for instance, like Hitler was an amphetamine addict, so to speak. And his complete army, and probably also the army in the First World War, a lot of people were on amphetamines. I mean, they give you a lot of energy. Yeah. They also, you know, help people, you know, when you're together, you feel like comrades. But of course, with the wrong intentions and what, you know, the hate that they spread about their opponent, that did make them fight really hard. Mm. So unfortunately, I think a lot of soldiers have been drug addicts, and LSD is not the good drug to make people fight and want to kill each other. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
No,
it brings togetherness and oneness.
Absolutely, yeah.
DJing has provided me with a channel for creativity as well as another form of meditation. Stay tuned for one of my cosmically curated DJ sets coming up shortly. So I think we have to wrap up soon. So I wanted to ask, are there any specifics you would like to share with the collective in terms of rhythms of the body and brain and just health in general?
Yeah, well, when you get born, I mean, your brain is switched on, right? When you start in your life, and when you die, your brain is switched off, so to speak. And in between, you shift gears between the different gears of your brain. You go from the beta state to the alpha state, and you go to sleep using your delta and your theta brainwave zone. And you want to be able to switch these gears thoroughly, because this will help you get more vital and more happy in life. And of course, you can use meditation techniques. You can use food. You can use plant extracts, even up to hallucinating plants to, you know, to switch gears thoroughly to develop your brain. And I think there's room to the upside. I think humans can really evolve and become more beautiful, doing more beautiful things, being more good species, so to speak. Treat the planet well, etc.
Yes, respect the planet and each other.
But also, I mean, there's so much room to grow. And I think switching gears is a powerful mechanism that people should use.
Where can the listeners find you on your socials?
Of course, yeah. I'm on Instagram. Leonard van Woerden is what I'm called there. And on LinkedIn, Leo van Woerden. LeoVanWoerden.com is going to be the place where people can, you know, get in touch with me if they want to, you know, hear a talk that I do about how the brain works. I use my drums, you know, when I do keynotes and workshops. I explain the brain using a djembe, so to speak. Yeah, I love to do that. There are also trainings on the website for people to switch gears thoroughly to help them sleep deeper, you know, have a more effective sleep, get more energized out of bed in a shorter period, so as you can say it. I'm all over the internet. You can find me on YouTube too. Yeah, I'd love to get in contact.
Wonderful. And I'll add all your information into the show notes as well. So it was a pleasure having you. Really, really appreciate you having here. Fascinating conversation. And hopefully we can do this again soon.
Thank you. And it was my pleasure. It was really nice talking to you. And
yes.
Always do it again.
Thank you. Doei.
Doei, doei.
Stay tuned until the end of this episode for a cosmically curated musical journey. Thank you for being a part of our community. Be sure to connect with me by hitting subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. I greatly appreciate your support and would be thrilled if you could leave a review. Your reviews help this podcast reach a wider audience and foster stronger collective connection. You can also connect with me on Instagram and YouTube at The Cosmic Whispers Podcast. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear and would like to check out the full set, be sure to find me, Cosmic Mama, on SoundCloud. That's soundcloud.com/cosmicmama.